takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long. I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. When I woke up, had shackles on my feet. 21 links of chain around my leg. 21 links of chain around my leg. 21 links of chain around my leg. And on each link, the initial of my name. I asked that judge, what's gonna be my fine? I asked that judge, what's gonna be my fine? I asked the judge, what's gonna be my fine? 21 years on the Rocky Mountain line. 21 years to pay my awful crime. 21 years to pay my awful crime. 21 years to pay my awful crime. 21 years and I still got 99. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long. If anybody asks you who made up this song, if anybody asks you who made up this song, if anybody asks you, well, who made up this song, tell them with me, and I've been here and gone. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, so make sure you head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio and show them some love, show them some support. They deserve it. They keep two streams of radio going just about 24/7. And hey, that's a lot of work for people that are only getting support from the people that listen. So it's worth it. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Vicky White, Larry Pinkney, M.K. Davis, Philip Ferruggio, and Frank Cordero. And so this Thursday evening, we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Northern Minnesota, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in Chicago, Illinois, in Benton, Mississippi, and wherever you are. And now my recommended list for March 21st, YouTube, Snow White Bigfoot Channel. My Bigfoot journey from the beginning. I wanted to take everyone back to the beginning of my Bigfoot journey to explain, especially to the ones who are new to my channel, how this all started for me and why I do what I do. Recommended YouTube Snow White Bigfoot Channel, My Bigfoot Journey from the Beginning. Also recommended Brother Nathaniel, YouTube, the title, The Pageantry of Mass Murders. Recommended Common Dreams, Momentum is Shifting, Move On, Calls for Democratic Presidential Candidates to Boycott AIPAC Conference. Recommended Fellowship of the Mind's website, post by administrator regarding Tony Mead's comment on the Christchurch shooting, New Zealand mosque shooting hero dad caught texting in rehearsal video, and also recommended reading and viewing from informationclearinghouse.info by Veterans for Peace, entitled Veterans Call on U.S. Troops to Resist Illegal Orders to Invade Venezuela.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Farrugio. That's F-A-R-R-U-G-G-I-O. And you should definitely check him out. Google him and you will see that he has columns all over the internet. He's a very prolific writer and a very good writer. We are very lucky to have him as a weekly columnist. And now, without further ado, here is Philip Farrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Okay, good evening, Working Stiffs. As this was the anniversary this week of the March 19th attack on Iraq, let's get to it. 3 days of infamy. On Monday, December 8th, 1941, FDR stood before Congress and said, December 7th, 1941, a date that will live in infamy. And the people of our nation rallied to the cause for justice. After 9/11, Junior Bush also rallied our people by telling us to, quote, get down to Disney World in Florida, take your families and enjoy life. That's what he said. Meanwhile, our great military-industrial empire was given the go-ahead to gear up for the war. On March 19, 2003, the Bush crew, led by former G.D. Searle CEO Rumsfeld, remember under his thumb, the slow poison artificial sweetener aspartame was born, they announced the newest phony war term. And that would be shock and awe, as we carpet bombed and missile shredded Iraq's infrastructure and citizens. Why not? As this was good business for the Bush-Cheney donors, who would then get contracts to clean up the mess, or also known as Reconstruction. Isn't infamy great? You know, this writer has written on more than one occasion my experience on that fateful morning of March 19, 2003. The night before, I was glued to my television set watching the news shows from Canada, hoping for an 11th-hour cancellation of the impending attack on Iraq. A month earlier, millions, including myself and my wife, no, actually tens of millions of people from throughout the entire world, marched and rallied against the planned illegal and immoral preemptive attack on another sovereign nation. Well, that fateful morning, all we had hoped for did not occur. My country did the dirty deed, and its karma still resonates. I can recall standing in my living room, watching some asshole on either CNN or MSNBC describing the shock and awe like a cheerleader would do at a football game. I cried like a baby. Sadly, many of my friends and neighbors drank the Kool-Aid and marched along with the lying Bush-Cheney cabal. Remember how many Democrats also wore their flag pins on their lapels? Months earlier, worrying about their upcoming re-elections, too many of them voted to authorize the cabal's preemptive attack plans. Miss Hillary, destined to be the champion of her party in 2016, marched lockstep with the evildoers. And you wonder why she lost her bid for the White House. Only a fool will deny that most of what our government labels as Al-Qaeda or ISIL or whatever fanatical Islamic group is out there would not even fit into a sports stadium with their numbers if we never attacked, invaded, and occupied Iraq. Ditto for Afghanistan, where the Taliban had offered to turn over bin Laden after 9/11. No, those two nations had to be controlled. Why? Well, as to Iraq, Hussein was going to begin selling his oil in euros and not in the dollars he always traded it. Of course, Iraq's oil reserves were massive and needed to be controlled by who else but us. Now, Iraq was right next to the other axis of evil, Iran, and wouldn't it be great to have our military right on their border? As to Afghanistan, well, it was a gateway and transport area for the whole oil and gas Caspian region. Plus, as we have found out later, Afghanistan is overripe with mineral deposits, one such being the lithium needed for the hundreds of millions of batteries for the sea of electronic gadgets used worldwide. As the late General Smedley Butler had written in his 1935 short book, War is a Racket, we need to see who profits from our military engagements, also known as wars. All the European and Middle Eastern nations that are flooded with this severe refugee crisis should finger the blame on Uncle Sam and their own participation in NATO. For without those terrible attacks on Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and now Syria by this U.S.-led imperialist coalition, more hearts would still be beating, more towns and cities not destroyed, along with a decent way of life for millions of people. Question is, when will the hundreds of millions of our citizens wake up and smell the coffee, or shall I say, the burning sewage coming from our elected officials and mainstream media? Holding one's nose is just not enough. Thank you.
And now we get the view from Uncle Bill's front porch. Conspiracies are real. There are many more of them than people are aware. Just Google, for example, Operation Gladio or the Northwoods Project. These conspiracies alone are sufficient to chastise those uninformed Western peoples who go around saying our government would never kill its own people. False flag attacks are used by governments in order to pursue secret agendas that they cannot publicly acknowledge. If President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney had said, we're going to attack Iraq and a half dozen other countries in order to exercise hegemony over the Middle East, steal their oil, and clear the path for Israel to steal the entirety of the West Bank of Palestine, diverting taxpayers' resources from serving the American people into the pockets of the armaments industries, and spilling the blood of your parents, spouses, children, and siblings, even the American people would have resisted.
Instead, following the famous advice of Hitler's chief propagandist, they said, our country has been attacked. Generally speaking, an observant person with a bit of education can recognize a false flag attack. However, a few people pay attention beyond what the official media says, and the media no longer investigates and questions, but simply repeats the official story. Therefore, only a few realize what has really happened, and when these few open their mouths, they are discredited as conspiracy theorists. This method of control might be wearing thin. There have been so many false flag terrorist attacks in the 21st century that there are now thousands of experts labeled as conspiracy theorists. The neoconservatives who controlled the George W. Bush regime called for a new Pearl Harbor so that they could begin their wars of conquest in the Middle East. A new Pearl Harbor is what 9/11 gave them. The charge conspiracy theory is used to prevent investigation.
9/11 was not investigated. The Boston Marathon bombing was not investigated. A scripted story was issued and repeated by the media. The San Bernardino shootings were not investigated. Again, a pre-scripted story took the place of investigation. The success of false flag attacks in the U.S. led to their use in the U.K. and France. The Charlie Hebdo affair was not investigated, and the official explanation makes no sense. The story was closed with all the loose ends dangling. For example, why did a French police official investigating the crime allegedly commit suicide in his police office in the early hours of the morning, and why was his family denied the autopsy report? What happened to this disappeared story?
Dear Western peoples, if you wish to be able to walk down the streets of your cities without being accosted by police, demanded to present identity papers, searched, detained indefinitely, or assassinated without due process of law. If you wish to be able to express your opinion about your government and its use of your tax payments, if you wish to be able to discuss current affairs or your personal affairs without being recorded by the NSA or the equivalent in your own country or by both, if you wish to live in the freedom that was achieved in the West after centuries of struggle, wake up. Find time from less meaningful pursuits to become aware of what is being stolen from you. It is late in the game. If you do not stand up for truth, you will have no freedom, as there is no freedom without truth. The View from Uncle Bill's Front Porch, sponsored by Homemade Apple Pie in the Bright Red Can. And now, Revolution College, Thursday evenings in the basement of the abandoned Humanities Building. Tonight's Revolution College lesson, Debbie Lusignan, the Sane Progressive, YouTube and BitChute.
When I started doing these videos about 3 years ago during the Bernie Sanders campaign, I very much considered myself progressive and left, but through these past 3 years, I really have morphed that party labels are pretty meaningless in a system so usurped by corruption. So now my videos are more not about party politics, but about trying to expose the corruption, how the corruption works, how it has seized different aspects of our government, how we can move forward to understand what is actually happening, so we can finally address what are the real obstacles for the American people to have any power anymore. It is a very dangerous time in our country's history right now. People are starting to be very afraid. People are talking in whispers. We are very much living in a climate of intimidation and fear. And this very much is a silencing tactic so that we are starting to self-censor. Very Orwellian times. The American people have been playing a game of pretend with ourselves. We are propping up a collective delusion where we are not addressing the elephant in the room because it scares people. And people don't know what to do about it. Since 2001, when the towers came down, this country, instead of keeping our wits, was subjected to a very deliberate propaganda campaign, a fear-mongering campaign, a disinformation campaign. We got swept up in this mantra of patriotism and this threat. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. So thus, we became the enemy. You have to disallow the law of physics to believe the official story of 9/11. We still, to this day, talk about 9/11 under our breath. We've gone along with all these massive rights grabs against us. Anybody who has investigated it knows the official story is a lie. We're to believe there have been 33 mass shooting events in the past couple of years. Post Parkland shooting, we're literally watching the same thing that happened after 9/11 again. A story that if you critically evaluate it is so clear, that the story is so contradictory and there are so many red flags that if we were a sane country, we would not be talking about more rights being relinquished. We would be demanding to understand what happened before moving forward in the same absurd pattern. There is nothing disrespectful to anyone or crazy about objectively analyzing information and having a logical discussion around it. And if there are red flags that demand that we need more answers, you follow them. It has nothing to do with right or left. It has to do with keeping our heads so that we can see what's before our very eyes. If you really want to know what happened, you would go watch the footage of what they showed you happened, because if you go to the local WPLG Local 10 news clip, they have 4 hours. It does not show a single person who had a gunshot wound being carried out. It shows empty gurneys being loaded in as rescued. It does show individuals with absolutely no sign of injury or any medical equipment whatsoever. It shows that. It shows what 12 witnesses on national media told us. It documents a drill. The drill that the students and parents and teachers said was scheduled that day. One girl said they told us to go outside so they could start shooting up. And there were army guys there, and they were piling bodies into the corner. Simulated. We have to say the emperor has no clothes. The emperor has no clothes. You've got to say it, and you've got to say it out loud. They never actually address or refute the content of the claims. They say, oh, these crazy, awful people are crazy, awful things. We're not. But before you even listen to what we're pointing out, first words out of their mouth is, you're crazy. because they listen to this media. And back to you, Chuck.
We'll see you again next Thursday night for the next session of Revolution College Underground in the Abandoned Humanities Building. And coming up in our next half hour, one moment, we will hear from Frank Cordero in Des Moines and Anthony Racine in Chicago. Please stay tuned to Revolution Radio, the listener-sponsored alternative to the lies presented elsewhere, day in and day out.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold. Arms and or legs often go to sleep. Sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe. Short walks cause cramping or pains in legs. Memory is not as good as it used to be. Ankles swell late in the day. Chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero, as always, joins us from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Quaker. I have a little bit here to read from the nuclear resistor, nukeresistor.org. 8 arrested blockading Des Moines Drone Command Center on St. Patrick's Day. This comes from a Des Moines Catholic Quaker and Frank Cordero. Veterans for Peace and Catholic workers from across the Midwest converged on the Iowa Air National Guard Drone Command Center in Des Moines on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day at 1 p.m. 8 activists were later arrested for blocking the entrance. The Midwest Catholic Workers, a loose collection of dozens of autonomous communities spread out in urban shelters, soup kitchens, and rural farmsteads across the region, were holding their annual Faith and Resistance Retreat, March 15th to 17th in Des Moines. This year's focus was the two-year Des Moines Catholic Worker and Veterans for Peace closed the Des Moines Drone Center. Close the Des Moines Drone Command Center campaign. Sunday's rally featured speakers Kathy Kelly, Sister Carol Gilbert, and Sister Ardith Platt, Dave Logsden, Michael Madden, Jacob Woodson, and Gil Landholt. And we're going to hear more about this, I'm sure, from Frank Cordero. So we're going to hear now the conversation between Frank Cordero and Chuck Gregory.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good here. Let me maneuver myself through my house.
Okay.
I'm going to go down the back stairs here. Of course, it has lots of posters, too, plastered everywhere, as you well know. I'm just taking a five-minute call with the guy on a weekly interview. All right. Got that done.
Okay.
So I'm on duty. Got a report.
Uh-huh,
so
right.
The weekend went extraordinarily well on a lot of levels, and we ended with a rally at the Drone Command Center, and 8 people were arrested for trespassing.
Yeah,
and,
I read about it. I saw your picture.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that the real good news is that 5 of the 8 are all from the Des Moines Catholic Worker.
Okay.
So the thing that's good about that is that our community was very much engaged in the weekend.
Yeah.
And we had the programs were really very significant, in as much as the we were the Midwest Catholic Worker Faith and Resistance Retreat, and we had folks who were at the core of the resistance movement in the Catholic Worker movement nationally with us present, first by Skype. We had 4 of the 7 Kings Bay Plowshares folks by Skype, having for an hour talked back and forth to the retreatants, and that was just really cool. Just for no other reason that we're really not really high tech folks, so it was really kind of funny that we're doing this thing. And we got to ask some really good questions. You have to explain their action and where they're at in the court system and what they're doing for self-care. It was really a moment where Catholic workers were talking to other Catholic workers about what it means to take risk and faith. And then later on, we also had 2 of the 4 valve turners. These are four people who were arrested for turning off a valve oil pipeline valve in northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, up there. And they were arrested, and they came, two of them, and explained their action. And again, why they were coming from faith and how much risk is involved. And it was great. Also, at the retreat back in town was Jessica Resnicek. Because Jessica's the young woman who's stole my heart, but also the heart of the community, of the movement, with her Northrop Grumman efforts, and then her and Ruby's Montoya's pipeline excursions here in Iowa and other places. So it was just like, you know, who's who in the Catholic worker resistance movement. I guess I got to admit we are missing the West Coast, because there are a number of people on the West Coast fully engaged in resistance, also in the Catholic worker, stemming from the L.A. Catholic worker. So we're a small little movement numerically, but most of us are engaging not only in hospitality, but in some form of, you know, disengaging the empire by resisting it in ways, lots of different ways, lots of different fronts. And when you live in the belly of the empire, lots of different opportunities.
Yeah.
So, and we spent a, seven of us spent a night in jail in the, there's no jail time for this particular offense. It's a petty trespass charge that they usually, people who are charged with this and see a judge in the morning are usually drunks who couldn't get their act together to bail out, and the judge just gives them an easy out by pleading guilty and being fined, and they're out of there. You know, it's just it's a very low-level scene. But a great experience for a number of people. Some of our people, was their first arrest. So one night on a cement floor with people we serve, you know, is not a bad thing. But it ain't easy for a guy who's 68. I could tell you. You know, you got to roll around. They give you a blanket.
Yeah.
By the time the morning comes, like I got no place. There's no comfortable way to lay on that floor without hurting a bone somewhere.
Because
I had already tried to find it.
Yeah,
it's
right.
But, you know, it's doable. That's the that's the thing. It is doable. Yeah. So that was the that report. And it was just, it was really good to have the interface. We didn't have many retreatants, but the people who were there got plenty of FaceTime with the guests and the speakers, and I was just particularly tickled to be able to reconnect with Sister Carol and Sister Artis, the two women that I acted up with for my Plowshares Action back 20 years ago, 1998, at Andrews Air Force Base. We put a little hammer onto a B-52 bomber. Ended up just doing 6 months for it, but it was really an extraordinary witness. These women were, and still are, just amazing people. Artis is 84, and Carol is like 76, and they're just great women. Oh, and then the other speaker was Kathy Kelly. You can't do better than Kathy Kelly. She's a wonderful woman who great connections with the Catholic worker movement, and she's with the Voices, and they go to the Middle East, and they're with the people these drones are killing, and know the effects. She was able to give a great testimony to that, so it was just good stuff, really good stuff. Yeah.
Well, Frank, you know, congratulations on it going well, and I'm glad you didn't, you know, get stuck in jail for more than a night.
Thank you. All we know is still very easy. Life is very, very easy. We hardly even come close to what we need to do. And these are really, you know, I'm really conscious how dark times they are out here in the Hitherland. I mean, when I started doing this, the Midwest was known in the Catholic world as a liberal place. Who were embodying the Second Vatican Council.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of things going on here. Today, it feels really, I mean, the word fascism is not an overstatement to the culture. It's a Christian fascism, and it's really not pretty. Not pretty at all. So, okay.
Well, Frank.
On that note, call me next week.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Frank. And
all right.
Hey, keep up the good work. God bless.
You too, brother. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Normally, our next guest on this week would be Anthony Racine, but Anthony is taking a month off, and he has suggested a wonderful guest for us, Vicky White. Vicky White is the coordinator of Chicago Books to Women in Prison. She's a writer, frequent collaborator with other prison abolitionist projects, including Anthony's. And we're going to call her right about now and see what she has to tell us. So bear with me right now while I pull up her number and dial it here to add her to the show. Okay, here we go. She should be here momentarily.
Hello, this is Vicky.
Well, hello, Vicky. It's Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Well, thank you, Chuck, and hello. Hello to you both and to everyone listening. It's a pleasure.
I hope you will start out by telling us a little bit about yourself. I mentioned the Chicago Books to Women in Prison, but I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that and then go on with what you have for us. So thank you.
That sounds perfect. I think I'll say a little bit about who we are and what we do and why, and that will give you a good look at some critical needs of people in prison, men as well as women, and a little focus on some particular needs of women in prison that don't always get the attention that they should. Chicago Books to Women in Prison, we're one of about 36 books to prisoner projects in the United States. Some are large, some are small, but we all exist, and we're all pretty much all volunteer organizations, and we exist because, as many of your listeners probably know, people in prison, by and large, have little or no access to books. Most are economically marginalized. You know, it's not as simple as just ordering books from Amazon, nor can their friends and family in many cases. Prisons have libraries, but those vary greatly in quality, tending toward the lower end of the quality scale, and access can be very limited. And simply stated, books are a lifeline to people in prison. Everything from education, spiritual enrichment, entertainment, and creative activity, which the importance of that can't be overestimated for people in an environment that's designed to stifle their humanity. It's designed to be cold. It's designed to be just a really horrible place to be. And books can be critical tools for organizing in prison in whatever shape that takes. Last year, our organization mailed nearly 13,500 books and composition books across the country. We serve all the women's federal prisons in the country, and we also send books to state prisons in 8 states, and we also provide books to women in Cook County Jail here in the city of Chicago. One of the important things about what we do, we are one of three Books to Prisoners projects that focus on women, also addressing the needs of trans women who may be housed in men's facilities, which puts them in an especially vulnerable situation, and also non-binary people. But we focus on women for a few reasons. This enables us to give some special attention to the needs they have. For example, the great majority of women in prison, 75% at least, they're parents of minor children. So this is the big concern of theirs, the care of their children who may be in foster care. They may be being cared for by relatives, which isn't necessarily a great situation. And so we make sure we have good books on parenting, especially books that are designed for parents who are in prison, people who are parenting from a distance. We have lots of kids' books, which are frequently requested. I'll add that, of course, perhaps the great majority of men in prison are parents too. Really big difference. More than 80% of the time when men go to prison, the mothers of their children remain the caregivers of the children or take on that role. When a woman goes to prison, less than 40% of the time does the father care for the children. So she's in a really tough position being in prison. And another really critical thing about the situation of women in prison is that estimates can vary a little bit on this, but easily 80 to 90% of women in prison have experienced severe trauma, have histories of physical, sexual, emotional abuse in their lives. Now, those figures tend to be higher for men as well, higher than people who are in the outside prison, but the figures are alarmingly high for women in prison. There isn't the care, the treatment, the programming, the support that really there should be. So we make sure we have a really good selection of books on trauma and abuse and related areas. I want to say something too about books and mail to people in prison. It's beyond the actual content of the books, beyond the extremely important communication back and forth between people in prison and pen pals, family, friends on the outside. Just the fact of getting mail in a prison can really be important in terms of someone's safety and security inside. When someone gets mail, whether it's a package of books from us periodically, or it's a letter, perhaps a lot of letters, that shows other people inside, everyone from other prisoners to correctional staff. That shows these people that this person who's getting this mail has people on the outside who care about her. And that can make a huge difference in someone's security inside. Interestingly, I just read today that for the very first time, amazingly enough, there's a systematic look at pregnancy in prison. Many women enter prison pregnant. And so, what happens? How do they fare? What happens to their children? How many miscarriages are there? And so forth. The very first time, are they attempting to
to make a systematic national study of this. I read that California, Florida, and New York are not participating, and of course these are three states that have a very large number of prisons. I mentioned prisons in particular, but I mentioned we provide books to women in Cook County Jail, one of the very large detention center. And there's about 219,000 women behind bars in the country, and most of them are in jail. And they're in jail because they cannot afford to make bail. And it's even tougher for women who, again, likely to be mothers of minor children. They probably are earning less than some of their male counterparts. And for anyone to be in jail, they're not even convicted, of course. So that can result in just a cascade of losing a job because you can't be at work. Then you lose your apartment and what have you. So, you know, this cascading series of very traumatic events in a family's life, and then that just leads to other problems for years, perhaps. And, you know, one other important point about women in prison, which is surprising when I learned it, but I've heard it from so many sources. Women in prison tend to get less mail than men. They tend to get fewer visitors. I was at an event last night, and a woman who teaches writing, facilitates writing programs, both in men's and women's prisons, said she noticed that. In the men's, in the waiting room in a men's prison, oh, there were so many people. Family members, so many people waiting to see their loved ones inside. She's also had the experience of being in a women's prison, and there's no one practically in the waiting room waiting. I guess women organize the trips for the men, but it doesn't always happen, vice versa. So these are just a few aspects of the situation of women in prison, some of their special challenges that we, in our, I think, small but very critical way, help address. And
Vicki, as we're kind of running out of time, and so I want to make sure that you tell people where they can get some more information, your website and others that you think are important. Please share that with our listeners.
Love to. You can find us at ChicagoBWP.org, or simply Google Chicago Books to Women in Prison. You'll find us easily enough. We're on Twitter and Facebook as well. And I also encourage everyone, please check us out. But if you're interested in getting involved in a group like ours, there may very well be one in your area. So there's a program in Boston called the Prison Books Program. Look them up, and on their website, they have a very nice list of programs across the country. So encourage everyone to learn more how they can directly support people in prison. And if it's not through a Books to Prisoners program, through being a pen pal or in some other way, it makes a huge difference.
I'd like to just mention that if you are wanting to get books to someone in prison, you can't just send them a book from your own home. You have to send it from an actual bookstore or publisher, or through a program like the one that Vicki's describing, the Chicago Books to Women in Prison. And so be very careful how you do this, because if you send it directly, it's not going to actually get to them.
That's a really important thing to add. And each prison has its own policies. Yeah, absolutely. It's not as simple as just sending books to someone. And a good way to do it is through programs like ours.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Vicki, for being with us. You filled in admirably for Anthony, and we really appreciate it. And I hope that we'll be able to talk to you again sometime in the future.
That would be wonderful. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs. Memory is not as good as it used to be,
Ankle swell late in the day. Chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest to the show is Larry Pinkney. Larry Pinkney joins us each month from Minneapolis. He's a former member of the Black Panther Party in the 1960s. He's a radio show commentator, a writer, an activist. And right now we're going to attempt to contact, in Minneapolis, Larry Pinkney.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Great to hear from you both. Greetings to everyone on this, what is it, the second day of spring? Spring has sprung, so they say. This evening, I want to just briefly discuss what I call critical thinking versus media hype. I repeat, critical thinking versus media hype. We all know that in these days and times that we're living in, there is a glut, if you will, of information. Unfortunately, most of that information tends to be meaningless. It's not information that we really and truly need to have, but it's a glut. It's there. People get caught up in it, distracted by it, etc. On the other hand, information that's very, very important tends to be watered down. And not only watered down, but only one or two perspectives are put forth for the quote-unquote public to analyze or to actually think about and analyze. The problem is that, or the challenge, I should say, I prefer that word, the challenge is that many of us do not analyze. We do not critically think. We tend to go along with the, quote, media hype rather than to look deeper and find out what really is behind what we're being told. You know, I was reading today about something. We've all heard the term false flag. And it occurred to me to find out where this term actually came from. Basically, the false flag is something, it means basically something that is not as it appears. Repeat, it is not as it appears. So much of, if not most of, the so-called news media, I would humbly submit, is really nothing more than a false flag. We're getting so-called information, but the information we're getting is not as it would appear. I learned that the term false flag actually came from, and you all may already know this, but for me it was quite interesting. I may have known it and just forgotten, but you know how the quote-unquote pirate ships would fly a, quote, false flag so that they could get closer to their opponent and strike them. Okay, the closer a ship could get to another ship, the easier it would be to try and surprise attack that ship. By the way, it wasn't only pirates, quote-unquote, who did that, but the Spanish and France did that. Spain and France would fly flags other than their national flag to give the impression that they were something that they were not. So then when they got close to the opponent ship, who didn't realize that this was an opponent, they would open fire. Thus the term false flag. Interesting, huh? Anyway, let's get back to critical thinking. Critical thinking means that we have to really try and analyze things from a number of different aspects. We need to think about the what, when, why, how, and who. What, when, why, how, and who. We certainly cannot depend upon the so-called news media to do that, nor, frankly, should we depend. They're not going to do it. They're not going to tell the truth. They're not going to give accurate information. What they are going to do is to push a narrative, a specific narrative. And I'm being general here. I'm not being specific in terms of example, because I want to leave that up to the audience to do that for themselves with virtually any topic, but particularly political topics. So we need to go behind what is happening. Remember the movie, The Wizard of Oz? Remember that? Pay attention to the man behind the curtain. Of course, the line was, don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. But we must do just the opposite. We must pay due diligence and attention to the man or the woman behind the curtain. Okay? That's called critical thinking. Pay attention. Do not be duped. What I try to do, and I say I strive to do this, is to look at a number of different sources. I may have my own perspective, but it's also very helpful to look at other perspectives, even though I may strongly disagree. And not only that, but if I maintain the perspective that I have, when I look at other perspectives, it helps me to sharpen or hone, H-O-N-E, that perspective that I have. So, you know, I don't run out to read publications that I know are essentially lying. But if someone sends me, for example, an article, for example, the New York Times I consider to be, in the Washington Post, horrible rags. And I say that simply because it's so clear that they push a narrative. They're pushing a narrative, an agenda, if you will. But when I read information out of them or from them, it gives me the opportunity to say, well, wait a minute. This, what you're saying, is absolutely either false or wrong, or it's been doctored, etc., etc. So just want to, again, emphasize the need for critical thinking versus media hype. And critical thinking is not limited, obviously, or should not be limited simply to media. We should use it as much as we possibly can as a tool, a dissecting tool, as best we can. So I'm going to not go on and on. I think it's very, very important to utilize critical thinking. Some people don't like it because it means, oh, they have to think. And as my cousin used to say, and thinking is work. And it is work. But we need to think. We need to critically think. That's some work that we better darn well do. And we should do it all the time. And it should become a part of our being. We should become very comfortable with it. So again, I'm not going to belabor the topic. Let's just remember critical thinking versus media hype. I want to thank everyone, as always, in the audience. And as we said back in the day, and I still say now, all power to the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, all power to the people. Thanks so much.
Larry, thank you very much. Well, that critical thinking is indeed one of the important, one of the most important skills that we can practice and that we need to practice.
Yes, yes. And thank you so much, both Chuck and Mike. Thank you all. And, of course, the wonderful audience. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Larry. And we will talk to you next month. And, hey, talk to you then. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Our next guest of the show is M.K. Davis. M.K. Davis is a Bigfoot researcher and expert on the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot film from California in the 1960s. M.K. joins us each month from Benton, Mississippi. You can find his work on, it's the Davis Report. He has, if you look it up, it's on, I think it's on YouTube or it's on his own website. But if you look up M.K. Davis and the Davis Report, you'll find his analysis of many films, and it's very informative, very good place to go. Now we're going to try and contact M.K. Davis in Benton, Mississippi.
Hello.
Well, hello, M.K. This is Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Okay. Down here in the deep south in the state of Mississippi, we're undergoing some epic flooding. The water is higher than I've ever seen it in my life, and with a lot more water coming down the rivers from up north, and it's got all the major streams and rivers backed up. It's kind of a long and protracted flooding. It's not like a flash flood. It just eases back and backs into the fields, lifts it up. And well, it's so hot that it's got the animals pushed out of their place. They're all crowded onto little islands of high spots. And a friend of mine, we kind of figured we would take advantage of the opportunity to see if any cryptids had been pushed out of their habitat. And so I got a pair of thermal binoculars, and we rode down the levees at night, and it was the most amazing thing I think I've ever seen. All these animals that normally are not competing with one another are all in each other's faces. And even the deer, I've got some video that I took through the binoculars. The deer just stood up and boxed each other. And then the wild hogs tried to catch a deer. You know, they were running after the deer. These things were completely and totally invisible, except for the use of the thermal binoculars. You know, this stuff's going on in the dark of night. And then I saw, it was at a choke point where the woods kind of ran out. And then there was fields, flooded fields. And it's right inside the woods there. There was a large cat. And that really caught my interest because this cat had very long legs. And I used to do a lot of hunting in my day back when I was a young man, and I killed a few bobcat, and it did not have the appearance of a bobcat. It had the shoulder blades that created a hump on the shoulder like a cheetah does when they walk, and kept the head down low. Long, lanky legs, and I got some pretty decent video of him. And that goes, it kind of took my mind back to some articles and stuff that I've read about cats interbreeding. And perhaps maybe sometimes you can find it on the internet, where down in Florida, actually, puma or panthers interbred with bobcats and created a hybrid. And this just kind of reminded me of that. And I went back and I reviewed the footage and just kind of did a step through frame by frame. And it's, if this is a bobcat, it is the longest legged bobcat I've ever seen. It has all the movements of what you consider to be a panther or a cougar, or, you know, they call them mountain lions, but down here in the South, they're panthers. So this was in a swamp that was oddly enough named Panther Swamp. And it makes me wonder if I didn't pick up a cryptid, you know, because of extenuating circumstances. Everything's out of kilter in a flood. Everything is nothing is behaving as it normally does. I went on over to some Indian mounds, and there were probably about 200 deer on this big mound, this what they call the Temple Mound. I've never seen that many deer in my life in one spot. And they were in a sheer panic. They would come off of the mound and run out there and wade in the water and go to some other little spot. Then they would panic and come back. Just very, very stressed animals. I got some real nice pictures of them, but, you know, just I kind of recorded, you know, what was happening. But they had an ag plane come over trying to spray this little island out there with Roundup. It was just a little island surrounded by water. There's no way that you can spray that island and not spray the water. I was talking to a farmer, and the farmer said, "What's he spraying?" He said, "Roundup." Well, I didn't say anything else, but I think Roundup is one of the big cancer causers. All that water is going back into the river. So I went through the water was all the way across the road by the Indian man, and I kind of treaded water with my Jeep. And kind of came up on the other side, and this lady was waiting on me, and she kind of scolded me. She said, "This is for local traffic only." I said, "Yes, ma'am." And I followed her to her house, and I explained to her who I was and everything. And it turned out that she knew my wife. And this lady's living on one of these mounds. And so she goes in the house and brings out a book. And it was a book on the Peabody Museum produced on the excavation of those mounds. They got it. Their family got that copy because they let the Peabody Museum dig in the mounds. And I could not believe my eyes, because I'd always heard that they were kind of tight-lipped about what they found. You know, they just closed it back up and left. I didn't know they had produced anything, you know, in print. But as it turned out, as I went to looking through the book, this was Poverty Point people. They were the oldest people in North America. And there was some strangeness about the different bodies they found in there. They found a lot of skeletons. But they said that the skeletons indicated that they had been involved in cannibalism. So a lot of the skulls were elongated. You know, they were like the Peruvian skulls. They went back, you know, they had been what they call head binding or cranial deformation. Down about 6 or 8 feet down in that mound, they had the body, the skeleton of a dog. Well, there was only one indigenous dog in North America, because the Poverty Point people go back to when that area was grassland. It goes past the point where it was woodlands, and right there at the edge of the ice age. And there was only one indigenous dog, and that was an American dingo. It looked like a dingo. And they had one of those dogs down in there. So I'm going to probably try to acquire one of those books. I didn't know there was anything on that, but it interested me a lot, because if you look at some of those skulls, they're pretty strange looking, and the people are strange looking, and they weren't the American Indians that were around the mounds when the Europeans came. These people were the builders of mounds, and they go way, way, way back. Back when they had camels and ground sloth and dire wolves and saber-toothed tigers and stuff. You know, it goes way, way on back, what they call a paleo Indian. So my adventures in the flooded swamp ended up being twofold. One is seeing some very, very unusual behavior for animals, looking for cryptids, and then, you know, also finding out about, you know, what was in those mounds, which is, to me, is outstanding, too. The original mound they call the Temple Mound was a pyramid, just like the Mayas or the Aztecs, but it was just made of dirt, and it had a flat top and a structure on it that finished their pyramid shape up to a point, what they call a cap. And they even had pictures of post holes. They had uncovered the post holes where that structure was up on top. And there was no burials in that mound. That was their worship mound. It was a temple. Fascinating stuff, though. And floodwaters are right now at their peak, and haven't shown any sign of receding. They're just holding right now. And a lot of people's houses are underwater. They're, like I said, it's a slow, you know, they can't do anything to help themselves other than, you know, wait on it. And so I'm going to make some more trips back out there and make the night runs with the thermal binoculars. If there's anything out there, the like the cryptid type, I'm going to try to get it on video, whether it be a Bigfoot or Sasquatch, or whether it be a panther, or whether it be any of the other cryptids that are occasionally seen, which, you know, you normally would not see. Those woods are expansive, but all of the woods are flooded. So they're on these little spots of high ground.
MK, we're,
how am I doing on my thing?
MK, we're just about out of time. I just want to say that we really appreciate having you on the show and presenting you know, reports like this. And
there's a lot of alligators, which I probably saw today, probably 30 or 40. And a run down the levee.
Really?
Right. They're all out along the levees, because their haunts are all flooded. You know, where they lay their eggs and where they live under the embankments,
right?
And stuff. Yeah. So they're all out on the levees. Yeah, it's big monsters.
Well, that's that must be quite a sight.
Well, it is. Check my Facebook out there, Chuck. You'll see some photos I took today.
I'll be sure to do that. Hey, thanks again for being with us, and stay dry.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank and annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Mycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. Tonight at the Moonrock Lake Public Library, they will be reading from the best-selling book by Moonrock Lake self-published author and dog catcher, Solomon Sendek, entitled Sweat, Global Warming in a Small Town, and Other Tales of the Great American Eastern Middle West. An excerpt as kindly sent to us by Moonrock Lake Public Librarian Doris Morris. It's cold today. That's good, right? It's always good when it's cold because that means there's no global warming yet, right? Anyway, there was a town, Jennifer Junction, not too far from Moonrock Lake, had a warming scare not too long ago. The story is all about the folks in Jennifer Junction, Tommy and Robert S. Thompson and the waitress and Cara with his college in his basement and Gutner and Jesse and the old people grain elevator casino and the radio station wanting everyone to wear sweatpants to stick a middle finger in the air to global warming. And then, well, sort of like the Lindbergh baby, well, sort of not, the Sox baby has been stolen. Maybe by that Laverna, the woman at the bank drive-up. Maybe by the food who owns foods. Maybe not. Jesse and Carl trying to capture the foods because they think they took sweat socks. Gutner and Ron Waters and the light blue Robin's Egg Blue pickup are chasing Steve, the incredible pizza dude, all around town because they think he took Sweat Sox. Things tend to get complicated quickly in a small town when you're not used to that complicated things. Anyway, let's get back to our story, huh? It's kind of steamy. Not like daytime TV, like sweaty. Hot and sweaty. Like moisture under your arms. Other places, you know. Sweat. Overall, ubiquitous, omnipresent, universal global warming in a small town. This gum is good. Makes my jaws strong. Larry likes it. I have strong jaws. I try to chew each stick 100 times on one side, then 100 on the other, and back and forth, you know? Actually, I don't like gum, especially watermelon. And I don't know anyone named Larry. Anything that tastes a watermelon, especially watermelon, but I think it helps me get inside my character, my Nona the waitress persona. It's not that hard. I love listening to coffee chatter. I think it's the most subtle, intelligent discourse invented by man since Hammurabi's code, the Socratic message, since third base coach signals. I just enjoy being around it, in its midst, within the penumbra, the glow of the embers of the cozy fire of discovery of each table and booth that are, to me, like a dark, welcoming roadhouse at the end of a long, winding, dusty road. I want to be an actress. My mother and father say it's not dignified work. Why don't I just stick to being a waitress if I'm not going to go to school? They would probably rather that I use my scholarships to NYU, Stanford, and Cambridge. You ever seen Gilligan's Island on TV? Well, the Howells? That's my folks. I'll go to Stanford when you pry these self-duplicate order pads from my cold, dead hands. Mr. and Mrs. Sox were in the other morning, sitting in Bluebird booth. I've got names. I read where the cottages of this one resort in Minnesota had names. Well, they were eating with Laverna. She had the pancakes. They ordered sausage, eggs, toast, hairdresser's hearty breakfast. Coffee, juice, full body creamer. Jim Sox was talking. Well, when is he not? He was telling Laverna and Bobby what he thought of the new radio promotion with the sweatpants. Well, Jim and Bobby were wearing sweatpants already, along with hooded sweatshirt, tennis shoes, you know, stopwatch, whistle, ball cap, what they wear every day anyway. For church, it's, well, leave it called ball caps in the bus. For funerals, black. Weddings, white. They like sports. I could tell Bobby and Laverna weren't listening. Jim's talking. It's like wallpaper. After a while, you don't hear him anymore. He's screaming with a red face, spitting bits of eggs. And yeah, you look around wondering who's here. It sure is quiet for a Saturday morning. Jim thinks Ron talks too much. Laverna says if he didn't, that would be weird radio. Bobby wants to get her volleyball players on a strict steroid diet. Sure, that's what's going on over at Justin Junction. I don't care what it does to the girls in later life, she says. I just don't. I want to beat the crap out of Judy Wells. No matter what I have to do, who gets hurt or what it costs. She took a long drink of juice. Excuse me for caring. That's why we keep score. At the same time that Bobby was talking to Laverna, Jim was telling Laverna that he had Rick and Ron Waters on his regional quarterfinals basketball squad. How many years ago? They were trying to run things in, little pukes. They'll be rich someday. Not dress in a certain way just because they tell me to. Little puke-faced little shit. Excellent hair. Laverna was listening to both of them at the same time, or trying to, or not. She's got a lot on her mind herself. Murder, robbery, larceny, she calls it. I'm not sure. Maybe there's a legal difference. She would know. Bad checks, that's another of her interests. Laverne, who used to be on the line at Krieger's, but she quit when this opening at the bank drive-thru came up. She took it to be in the middle of the action where the money is. That's what everyone thinks about all day, having enough money to do exactly what they want to do, and Laverne is no different. She just has a more direct approach, maybe a little more honest than most. She told me she wants an adventure. The kids are almost out of the house. So is Bill. She asked me if I'd go out window peeking some night. She wanted to kidnap some of the high school football players, take them out to the dirt road. I told her we'd go to prison for that. Her eyes just lit up so nice. What would that be like, I wonder, she said. I don't think she's been many places. She just smiled so wide. God love her. After work today, I got to go to my other job at the senior center. I deal blackjack. It's a nice break from this place after 8 hours. I have to be busy or I go nuts. When the Union Pacific shut down this spur, it sent everything over to Jason Junction. Closed our elevator. Sat empty for a few years, collecting pigeons, rats, and Myers Brothers. And the city got corralled into this statewide improvement project, handed some money that they had to use or lose their liquor license. They had to raise matching funds, which was a huge problem. But finally, they decided to turn the elevator into a new senior citizen center. They formed a committee, the council, Kiwanis church ladies, some of the old people. The old people told the rest of them what they wanted to do with the center. We don't want another big cold room with a few old magazines and card tables, Mimi said. So what they did was open a casino type thing. 200 feet of vertical thrust, geriatric decadence, they're calling it. On the ground level, you have your cards. Second is for darts. Elderly perversion, what's your limit? That's the official advertising jingle, I guess. On the third floor, they have whist. On the fourth, dice. Then it's topless. And the top, well, that's bottomless. Kind of cute. Hey, it's me, Tommy. I'm sweating myself to death. Somebody took sweat socks. The sweat socks baby. He's a boy. He's just a baby. That's too bad. Makes me sad, kind of. Somebody said it just happened. Excuse me. Sorry. Hi. That's why I'm flying over to Carl's. He would know. He knows everything. No, really. He's got his own college. I'd say it's about a week old, but baby, the college is older than that. I can't remember when it was born, but I didn't even know they had a baby, really, till this morning. Somebody said it was kidnapped. They think it was the booze who take it. They're Korean. They're probably getting even for all the babies they've got. Well, a lot of the people have them. We got Xbox. Mom says that's enough for now. The booze. Mary Wu and Larry, they don't speak American. They don't look at you. They're always talking to each other, making secret plans, maybe. Bobby, Mrs. Sock, said, well, she's my PE teacher. She was. I'm not sure if she will be next year. She said if it was a girl, they were going to call it Sweet Socks. Isn't that just precious, she said. We said, yeah, kind of. And if it was a boy, Jim, Mr. Socks, was going to call it Sweat because it'd be a boy playing sports, always working hard, be a good example to everyone about running everywhere you were going, giving 110% and hustling, always working up a ladder, is how he said it. I'm riding around everywhere, telling everyone, seeing if they'll help look for a little sweat. I saw Nona. She's working this morning since it's Saturday and it's busy. She just waves at me out the front window. She's smart. She knew what I was going to tell her. She wanted me to keep going, telling lots of people. I saw Judy, the Presbyterian minister. She had on her Army uniform. She has to be the Army recruiter, too, since it's a small town. All the ministers do, I guess. I waved, and she saluted. That's pretty cool. Paul, he's a janitor at the middle school and the high school. Somebody else does the elementary building. But Paul was in his pickup in the parking lot, Pooh's Foods, and he was getting toilet paper and pine salt. I told him maybe he shouldn't go in there, but he did. Paul knows everything about every sporter, every kid who ever played sports here. He lets the swarm play football with the Pepsi cup full of gravel and fold it over out behind the bleachers during a football game. He's not supposed to, but it's better to have the swarm on your side. I know. The swarm's about 100 little kids who run around town doing whatever they want. They surrounded me once on my bike. Lucky for me, it started pouring out or I was dead. I just saw Laverna. I went flying through the drive-up. I thought she'd want to know. I skidded out, then sat there waiting for her to look up and smile. Usually she at least smiles. A car behind me honked. I turned around quick. Not a loud honk. More like a beep. Hi. Hey. I came around to the passenger side, walked up to them while Christopher's mom pulled up to talk to Laverna. Hey, you hear? Hear what? Said Robin and his mom. She's always listening, even when she's looking the other way. Yeah, it's unfortunate, said Christopher. Christopher says things like unfortunate and fortuitous, depending on whether it's something good or bad. He's in high school, but he's short, so he talks to me. Anyway, he's a state representative for Jennifer Junction. I think he's the only one who wanted to do it. His mom drives him to the state capitol when the legislature's in session. When he's 16, he'll probably drive himself. But that's what my mom said. The Mexicans walked through, wearing their nice Saturday shirts and jeans on their way somewhere. Then Don pulled up in the cruiser and circled the parking lot. See ya, I told Christopher. I pedaled up to Don. He stopped and rolled his window down to smoke. Hey, Tommy, heard anything new? He asked me. Well, I told him who I talked to so far, where I was going. Nothing else. Don sat there with his window down, air conditioning the bank parking lot and smoking. I sat on my bike next to his car. I tried to sit and balance without touching the ground. There wasn't much else to say. Don has kind of limited interest. He's okay as a cop. Somebody said he likes it. Well, see ya, Tommy. Stay out of trouble. He flicked his cigarette. He always says that. Flicks his cigarette butt away from me. If he was a jerk, he might flick it at me. But then I wouldn't stop and talk to him if he did that all the time. I could see Sherman, and I was kind of waiting for old Don to flick his cigarette so I could go see what old Sherman was doing. He's the mailman for this part of town. They give these jobs to servicemen, my dad told me once. I asked Sherman about that once, and he laughed, not at me. He said he was a draft dodger in Canada and never got to go to war. He got the job anyway because the rest of the people at this post office are cool, he said. My mom says they're all a bunch of drug addicts. It's a wonder anybody gets the right mail in this town. Hey, Sherman. Tommy, my man. Sherman stops and waits for him. He's got a black and gray beard and ponytail, and he wears a Packers cap with mailman shirt and shorts, and long black socks, black mailman shoes. I tell him right away about sweat socks, the baby. Laverna's got him, Sherman says, ducking his head to look over the top of his glasses at the bank drive-thru. Who else has the motive? Cui bono, says Sherman. I don't say nothing. I just sit on my bike and think about it. Sherman kept going. I just sat there for a while. It was getting even hotter. I could tell from where I was, I could smell chlorine and popcorn. So I pedaled slow, almost falling over, all over to the pool. Some of the lifeguards were there putting on lotion and whistles. Some were giving lessons to the bankers. While the parents in the car stared holes in the heads of the lifeguards to pay some attention to their stupid kid when that they didn't drown during swimming lessons. Well, Linda's the head lifeguard. She's been there for some time since I've been going. And now they built the indoor part of the pool to go with the outdoors. She's got a big job. I wouldn't want it. She also has to buy beer for all the teenagers, and she gets other stuff for other people. I've seen Sherman shoving dollar bills through the fence to her. It's a lot to keep track of with the pool and everything else, I bet. People are always looking for her, bothering her. She's too fat to climb up on the lifeguard tower anymore, so she stands by the fence with her whistle in her mouth and watches. I guess she used to be pretty. That's what Don said. I guess he was talking about Linda. I don't know who else it would be. Anyhow, She said it was the booze and Laverna, all right. She said Don was thinking about going over and arresting Laverna right now, is what she heard on the scanner in the lifeguard room. I need to go talk to Carl. can't stand that kid. Looking in the window all the time. I think he does it at the house too, little perv. We've got customers. Can't worry about whether some bimbalicious bank teller stole some little kid. Not when I got orders waiting. Call the Red Cross. I've got ketchup bottles to fill. Look at this. This is what I have to deal with. Missing kidnapped kids. Like, who's got the luxury, huh? Here. See? Each friggin' napkin is stamped with some business name. Jack and Jill Plumbing. Burns Family Dental Care. Jennifer High School. Jesus Junction. And guess who gets to stamp each and every one between wiping runny noses and filling salt shakers and cleaning off syrup bottles? KJEN Radio. Brawl and Saul's friendly hometown bank. Jane June, John Kent, Mark, and Mary, attorneys at law. Worked here at Tony and Tina's Cafe for a few years now. Does not get old, not really, when you think about it. I'm a people person. I need a smoke. Come on outside for a second. I hear a lot. People think I'm not listening, and I'm not, but I can't really help it. I guess old Ron was home one afternoon about 4. He and his son and daughter and better half all ended up in the kitchen. This was before school let out for summer. Yeah, had to be. Weatherman, it's just it's not getting warmer, Ron says to everybody and no one, stepping in front of his daughter to grab the milk, getting the famous Rachel Waters evil eye. No mention of it. Excuse me. He ducks under his son's arm to reach the cheese. They'd tell us if it was real. Yes, they would. He sat at the table with his milk and sandwich and chips while the other three kept working on gathering their stuff. And yet the UUs keep saying global warming this, polar monkeys that, those poor glacier guppies there. Got to put our foot down. Enough is way more than enough. Sweatpants. Not that warm out. In fact, it's kind of chilly, especially in the evening lately after the sun goes down. That is the stark reality we're dealing with here. Could you reach me the pickle, sweetie? Thanks. There goes Don. Oh, my God, he's got Laverna in the back seat. She smiles, waves with her cupped hands. This is a big day for her. That's so nice. There's Cece Seal. It's uphill, like Mount Olympus, Carl says. It's almost straight up. Probably not straight up, but it just about feels the same like it. And there's Carl. He's walking around his yard with his head down, his arm behind his back, his pipe in his teeth, and he's hurt. Hey, Carl. Hello, young man. What's to be done? I pull right up to him in front of him to maybe make him stop pacing. The way I can follow him all over his lawn on my bike with all the night crawler hills. He's actually pinned between me and the peonies. White. Pink, too. I say, I don't know. He just wants to talk. I know that. His questions are not Socratic, rhetorical. He's not interested in what I have to say. That's okay with me. I don't come here to really say anything. Carl is wearing a black professor's graduation gown. He has on an Afghan Pakal hat. I know because he told me. So he looks like maybe Sherlock Holmes in his graduation gown and pipe out stalking his yard, unconsciously stepping over and around all the dandelions. Now that there's a local murder to be solved. Well, not really a murder yet, but well, it could be. That would be serious. That would be lots of pacing required. People would have lots to say. There might be outdoor barbecues to talk it over. Maybe a circus, big church festivals, parade, candy. It's true that Don is on the case and already has the suspect in the back of his car, but I don't think it hurts to have Carl out here in his hat, black graduation gown, brown penny loafers and pipe anyway, just in case. Carrie. The pipe tobacco. It's cherry. Mm-hmm. He takes it out and taps, well, rather beats. Carl likes us to use specific language against his palm. Then the side of his shoe. I think he probably saw his granddad do that. There's really no reason. It'll just fall out if you turn it over. The financier is in official custody. Carl tells me it's not looking at me, but rather over the lawn in the direction of the fire hydrant, as if it would speak if only someone would listen. I'm a prop, like the pipe and hat and gown necessary for the play, but well, I don't mind. You know? It's what it is, you know. Jesse pulls up in a tan 88 Accord ladder truck. He's trying to get a Dalmatian. He still lives at home. His mother says they're a nasty breed. So Jesse says he's either moving or just keeping the dog in the car. I'm not sure what that does to the monthly training sessions. There's a lot to consider when you enter the public service field. That's what Carl says in his public administration course. Jesse parks up the drive and rolls down the window, cocks his head. He's chewing gum. I guess he's trying to quit smoking something. As he tilts his head to look up at Carl, somehow keep the sun out of his eyes, his seed corn cap hits the door frame, now sits on a kind of angle with his head, which turns out is just right for the sun. I'm thinking, Watson, I presume. I smile, and they don't see. What about the foos, says Jesse. Carl flashes a look that's all about the foos. Foos, foods. Carl presses these nuggets with his fingertips into the ground. The foos. Jesse tamps the ground. You think the foos took sweat socks? I run over, try not to trip and spill the watering can. I was smiling. And that's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We're glad that you joined us tonight. We hope you'll be back next Thursday and every Thursday right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And don't forget, it's a listener-supported network. So head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Show them some support. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thank you, Chuck, for all the work, all you did to make the show happen. And thanks to our guests, Julie White, Larry Pinkney, M.K. Davis, Philip Ferruzio, and Frank Cordero. If you'd like to contact any of our guests, you can write to me at nwestiowa@gmail.com. Back to you, Chuck.
Once again, I'd like to thank you all for joining us. We do thank you, and good night. I don't think we have any time for anything else in exit, so we just hope that you will be back to see us next week. The New American Dream Radio Show, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Welcome to Revolution Radio, where you, the listeners, are in charge. Here at Revolution Radio, we present 48 broadcast hours of news and information each and every day. Revolution Radio never sleeps. Revolution Radio is worldwide and borderless information. Revolution Radio is also commercial free. Revolution Radio is supported 100% by you, the listeners. And that's why we appeal to you to donate and support this station and its expenses. You can support us in many available options like archive subscriptions, our seed pack selections, or even my woodworking store. And we also even have Revolution Radio's swag at the Revolution Radio Zazzle store, in which you can get t-shirts, coffee cups, even a baby onesie. Or you can just plain donate to the cause. We cannot continue without your support, and your support is what helps pay the bills. So please, if you wish us to continue, please stop by our station support page and drop a dime on us. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank or all the...